The Executive Chair on News Talk.
I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair, Mr. Maurice Pratt. He's the Non-Executive Chairman of Unifar. Maurice, how are you?
How you doing, Bobby? Good to see you.
Now, this is an executive chair slot. You say quite rightly you're non-executive, but is there any such thing as non-executive when you're involved, Maurice?
Well, you're non-executive when things are going well in the company, and then when things aren't going so well, you become more executive, as in more hands-on time-wise.
Yeah.
But it's very important when you're in the non-executive scenario that your head is in, but your nose is out.
Right. I think I get that completely. Let's chat about Unifar, Maurice. It's an amazing business. $3 billion plus in revenue, three divisions. You've been involved for what, nearly 15, 20 years?
15 odd years, yeah. So quite a long time, yeah, from the beginnings of when I first got involved with the company as a non-exec. And then taking over as chair back in 2009. When I started, there was about 365 employees in Unifar. Now we have about 3,500
wow.
Based around the world. Obviously, very strong focus in Ireland, but nevertheless, very strong in the rest of the world now as well.
Yeah, interesting as well. When people hear Unifar, they don't realise that, I suppose, the public face of that are the pharmacy chains.
Yeah.
The Hickeys.
Macaulay's Life, All
yeah,
Care.
Yeah. So that business, I suppose being in the front end retail part of that and then being the wholesale supplier is interesting because I suppose you control your own margin to a fair degree.
Well, to a certain extent, but I mean, it's a low margin business. I mean, it's a high revenue turnover business, wholesale business is, but it's low margin. So, you have to find areas in the business where you can generate profitability. The investment requirement in the core business is very substantial.
Yeah.
We're right in the middle at the moment of €100 million investment to sort of future-proof the business.
Do you mind me asking where that €100 million gets spent? In what type of things?
Primarily in technology. We're building a facility, facilities in four locations around the world, but currently we're building one in Green Oak too, up off the M50. It's in excess of 300,000 square feet, and it's going to be full of robotic technology and integrated into our total supply chain. The whole idea being to try and minimise the paperwork that pharmacists ultimately have to do. I mean, pharmacists are, in many respects, one of the most underappreciated professionals in Irish society. If you think about COVID and think about how the whole pharmacy system had to get medicines to the public, and then we, behind the scenes, obviously had a key role in supporting that. But just think of their professionalism when you couldn't get to see a doctor and all the other things that went on, how important they were and how important they are.
Yeah, and again, I often wonder, it's 600 plus points to be a pharmacist. And, often you end up working in somewhere that doesn't maybe require 600 plus points. And I don't mean that in any way, to be any way derogatory, but just the environment is in frontline retail.
Well, it is. But I mean, first and foremost, people who do it, they have a vocation. They want to do it. Many cases, they have parents or they have relations who have been pharmacists. And you're right, they're very smart people. And they can do an awful lot more. I mean, it's interesting, in the last year, we've had the introduction of this facility where pharmacists can prescribe medicines for certain minor conditions. And I think there should be more of that, because we all know we're short of doctors. The healthcare system's under an awful lot of pressure. And pharmacists have that expertise. They have that training. They have that skill. And more critically, they have the trust of the public.
Yeah. You've vast experience, Maurice, working in publicly listed companies. Unifar is no different. You rise and fall with the share price. As you get more mature, let's call it, and you have a few years behind you, maybe more behind you than in front of you, working for that share price and the sensitivity of it, does it keep you awake at night still?
No, it doesn't, because if you let it keep you awake at night, you will probably make the wrong decisions in the long-term interest of shareholders. It is a great challenge. I mean, if I went backwards in history, I used to hate the fact that you had quarterly reporting. And I used to say to investors, it's very difficult to ask me to manage the business or direct and control a business and then spend so much time talking to investors in such short periods of time. So now at least we're back to half yearly reporting, which is helpful. But I mean, if you spend your life concentrating on the share price, you just wouldn't get your job done.
Yeah.
The critical thing is to make the right decisions for the entire shareholding group in the business. Unifar, we have significant investor shareholders, but we also have a very large group of community-based pharmacists who are the heart
shareholders in the business.
They're shareholders in the business and they're the heart of our business.
As you've always been a marketing-led CEO, and again, that's why I'm not surprised to hear you answer that question around the share price. Do you think sales and marketing first before when you look at any business?
Personally, I do. I mean, a long time ago, if people ask me, well, what do you do?
Because I'm not sure.
A lot of people don't understand marketing, but I used to say, well, I'm the conscience of the customer in the boardroom. And so if you think about the customer ultimately in the business, irrespective of what your particular skill set is, if you think about them first, you're generally speaking, you won't go wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a really good analogy because, you know, you're actually working for the customer first. And I think sometimes people forget that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I went to visit many years ago, a retailer in Connecticut, and they had a big stone rock outside the front of the building. This place was called Stu Leonard's. It was an institution retailer. And he had a big rock and it said, rule one, if the customer, the customer's always right. Rule two, if the customer's ever wrong, reread rule one.
Again, maybe looking slightly backwards, looking at, and I think this is maybe a very interesting time in your own career, when you were the CEO of Quinsworth, it was acquired by Tesco. And again, many people of our vintage will remember these times. This was, I suppose, an English or British supermarket coming into Ireland. And part of your job, I suppose, in those days was to make Tesco feel a bit more Irish. And I can imagine that was it may sound sort of, you know, lighthearted at this, but that was a key challenge because there might have been public resistance to the fact that an English chain was taking over Quinsworth as it was.
Well, the great irony of this, Bobby, is that Quinsworth was owned by an English business anyway.
Yeah.
It was owned by Associated British Foods. It was owned by the Weston family, Weston organisation. So we were part of that. So I thought we had done a brilliant job in the fact that nobody realised that we were, in fact, an English-owned business at the time. But Tesco was a completely different, business in terms of their scale. And to be fair to Tesco at the time, and I would have supported advising them in this regard, that they needed to give an assurance to the Irish business community and customers that they would support the business, they would support Irish product. And I was only looking in the papers recently, I see they said that they're selling 800 million euro worth of Irish product across their stores around the world now. So that's a fantastic
absolutely
from their point of view.
Yeah. After Tesco, again, you could have had any CEO job you probably wanted. You decided to take a different tack. Had you just enough of the cold face, of the full on, maybe the public aspect of it? Did you just want to maybe just have a quieter involvement, maybe somewhat less public?
No, it was less that than the opportunity came up. As you said earlier, I'm a marketeer at heart, and the opportunity came up to join C&C. C&C had one of the largest marketing budgets in the country. Back then, and probably, I don't know what the situation is today, but there wasn't all that much origination of advertising in an Irish context and Irish brands. And then the business was growing strongly in the UK. So that was as much and it wanted to float, it wanted to go public. So it was a combination of factors. It wasn't that I was unhappy in any way.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, an opportunity came along. And I mean, how rare is it to take a company to the stock market? Well, thankfully, I've had two opportunities, but there you go.
And, you know, if you look at any career, you know, we all have our ups and downs along the way. And isn't it about, you know, making sure you remember the good times when you have bad times and vice versa?
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, it's about resilience. And then, you know, in the non-executive scenario, scenario, what's great is that you're able to stand back a little bit from the hustle and bustle that you know that the senior executives are in the middle of, and give them advice based on your own experience.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's the really critical piece.
And you know, life is also about, you know, timing, meeting opportunity. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we don't always get it right, but, you know, life goes on.
Well, it does. And you know, and you know, whatever the situation is, you know, if you even take the current geopolitical situation, I mean, it will change. It will move on. Everything moves on. And yeah. so the important thing is to recognize and know that, and not, you know, avoid being fazed by it. You know, don't get down, and don't get, you know, just be strong, stay strong, and be true to your values as well. That, to me, has always been very important in business.
Yeah. Finally, I wanted to ask you about, do you ever reflect on the heady days of the supermarket wars? I was thinking of poor old Ben Dunn recently. Those, you know, That sort of the public war that was, you know, we're better than you, we're cheaper than you, we're all these other things that the other guy isn't. They never got really that personal, did they? Or
No, they never. Let me put it this way: I never took it personally because business is business. But it was quite amusing to see, you know, cartoon drawings of yourself on Dunstore's ads back in the 80s, and then of course, you know, the voucher wars, which happened then. You know, lots of current consumers just wouldn't know anything about those times, but they were challenging times. And I mean, the Irish retail is in a great place. Irish retail, and you'll know this, we're a small country, so you have to work very hard to get the to get the customers euro. So Irish retail stands up around the world in terms of what it delivers, how it presents itself, and how, you know, how capable it is of actually driving consumers. I think this is a key thing. Irish business, Irish retail understands that if you're, you know, as I said earlier, if the customer comes first, the customer is likely to come back.
Yeah, yeah. What's next for Maurice Pratt? You're fit, you're well, you're looking great. You've got loads of energy in the boardroom and out. Just more of the same.
Well, about a year and a half ago, I took on the chairmanship of the non-executive chairmanship again. I might add, of the Coombe Hospital.
Good man.
And that's interesting, and it's different. And for me, it's part of the give back. And obviously, I tried to use my business experience, a business acumen, to help. And in fact, the hospital is 200 years old this year.
Wow.
So there'll be lots of hopefully of celebrations and opportunities. And again, another institution that is probably not fully understood for all the work it does. The number of gynecological operations it does, its women's healthcare centre, and so on. So, I like to take on challenges where I think, you know, you can make a difference. You can actually do something. But I mean, I'm still involved in Unifier. Will be through to the year end. I'll be finishing up with Unifier as chair at the end of this year. But I mean, all that time it's been fantastic. We've had our ups and our downs, but since we floated in 2019, you know, we've grown the business to 130 million EBITDA. By 2028, we expect to be up to 200 million.
Yeah, that's what. And to coin a phrase, you've done the shareholders some service. You have.
Well, I hope so.
Maurice Pratt, a pleasure to talk to you. Best of luck with the Coombe Hospital. And thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Bobby. Great to see you.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.